Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Drew by Marie James. Narrated by Kasha Kensington and Aaron Shedlock. Prologue. Isabella.
Here you go, Izzy.
Thank you, I tell the waitress as she places the plate of food on the table in front of me.
My empty stomach is even more enthusiastic.
Growling at the scents wafting up from the plate, she chuckles as she walks away,
but I'm too hungry to feel an ounce of embarrassment.
I dig in, barely cutting the pancakes into manageable bites before shoveling them into my mouth. Why I left campus before grabbing something to eat is beyond me. I've been traveling back and forth from college in Albuquerque to where my dad lives in Farmington, New Mexico for years, and I always manage to forget to eat. Maybe it's why the staff at this small, family-owned diner know me by name. Pancakes are a simple thing. Mere batter, honestly. But covered in butter and thick, sticky syrup makes them a masterpiece. I'll fight anyone that wants to argue. The bacon here is cut thick and crisped to perfection. I groan in appreciation, thankful for the thin crowd tonight.
I was thinking of getting a burger, but you're making those pancakes sound like they're the best thing you've ever had in your mouth.
Looking up, I freeze, uncaring there's a dribble of syrup threatening to drop from my bottom lip. I'm no stranger to good-looking men, or men who approach me with some slick pickup line laced with sexual innuendo. I'm a college student, after all. Guys on campus think they're God's gift to women, and we should be so lucky to get a little alone time with them. Think being the operative word when it comes to those guys at school. There's a good chance this man standing beside my table is actually God's gift. His military haircut, shaved close on the sides and just a little longer on top, combined with bright blue eyes, makes him handsome. The muscles peeking out from under his shirt to showcase thick biceps have the ability to make me lose my breath. But the uniform, the gun belt, the badge displayed proudly on his chest make him devastatingly gorgeous. I blame my dad, a man who's fiercely loyal and honorable, for my attraction to protective men. Being safe is a huge turn-on for me, and this man looks like he has those abilities in spades.
Are they good?
His lip lifts in the corner, and as a woman who normally hates a smirk, this man is quickly making me change my mind. Hi, I squeak stupidly, my brain unable to answer his actual questions. His smile widens, and I can tell by the knowing look that he realizes I'm already putty in his hands. It should alarm me, should make me stop to think, but I don't. Hell, with him looking down at me, I can't. Dad would be so disappointed. Even the devil was beautiful in God's eyes. Although Dad isn't very religious, he's told me those words as a warning more than once. Translation: stay away from handsome men. They're the ones who will bring you the most grief.
May I join you?
Blinking up at him, I don't answer, too enthralled by watching his lips move each time he talks.
May I?
He repeats, pointing to the empty part of the booth across from me. Somehow I manage to nod my head, pulling a rumbling chuckle from deep inside of him.
You've got...
I'm frozen as he lifts his hand to my mouth, using a single finger to wipe away the syrup clinging to my lip. It's like he's lit a fire inside of me. And when he draws that sticky finger to his own mouth, licking away the syrup, I'm certain I melt into a puddle right there. Is this even real life? Do creatures this gorgeous even exist? When the waitress approaches, she manages to take his order for a plate of his own pancakes, even though it's clear she's just as enamored. Strong, thick fingers tap the tabletop as he watches me.
It feels more like an undressing than scrutiny. As if while sitting here, he's stripping each item of clothing from my body. I feel the cool air of the diner on my overheated skin, feel the brush of his fingertips down my side, tracing each rib, even though we aren't touching. My mind is warning me of danger, while my body is itchy and eager for anything he could suggest. "You're quiet. Are you nervous?"
I manage to shake my head.
"So no warrants, then?"
I grin back at him. "No, I never get into trouble."
"That's a shame. I was hoping to frisk you."
"Oh, I like the flirting. Wouldn't a female state police officer be the one to do that?" He licks his lips before speaking again, and I swear he's torturing me on purpose.
"Most people would just call me a cop, without specifying which department."
"That's silly. It's on your patch." I've been trained to look at patches for years now. After my dad joined the Cerberus MC a couple of years ago, I'm constantly around people who have them on their clothing. I toy with my fork, twisting the tines in the fluffy pancakes, trying to figure out a way to get our conversation back to his frisking comment, and hating that we've gone so far off course.
"O'Neill,"
he says, his hand reaching across the table. "Megan," I lie, placing my hand in his. Using a fake name isn't unusual to me. Dad taught me to be diligent, and the less people know about you, the harder it is for them to track you and hurt you. Expecting him to shake it, he throws me off kilter when he lifts my hand and presses warm lips to the back of it. "Aren't you charming?" I whisper as he lowers our hands.
"And you're gorgeous."
He doesn't release my hand, and I find it strange that it doesn't feel at all weird to be holding the hand of a man I just met. "Thank you."
"Are you from around here, Megan?"
"Yes." It's not really a lie. Around here is subjective, and since I live in New Mexico, it's mostly truthful. Besides, ask vague questions and you'll get vague answers. "Here you go, sweetheart." The waitress lingers even after placing the plate of pancakes in front of him, but he never pulls his eyes from me. This man is good at what he's doing. Does it make me a fool for falling for it? People are supposed to have fun, have wild nights when they're in college, right? I can't help but wonder what a little time spent alone with this man would look like.
"Your food is going to get cold,"
he says, releasing my hand so he can begin his own meal. He groans with the first bite, and if I sounded anything like he just did, then I know why he approached me. The sound is pure sex, decadent sin, and arousing. He licks away the syrup on his lips before I can open my mouth to offer doing it for him, but the little wink he shoots my way tells me he knows the suggestion is there.
How long have you been a police officer?"
I manage only by focusing on the plate in front of me rather than his handsome face.
"Not long, less than a year. I'm still doing my field training."
Like every other man I know, he shovels food in his mouth and still manages to grin while he chews.
"Where's your partner, then?"
"He's working on a personal project right now,"
he says after taking a sip of coffee.
"What about you?"
"I'm not a cop." I barely refrain from smacking my forehead at the stupid response. "I'm a college student. And if it weren't for my best friend Sophia managing to get behind in her classes, I wouldn't even be alone right now. We normally drive back home for spring break together, but she's been delayed. I don't know if being alone right now is a good or bad thing."
"And your major?"
elementary education. His smile grows, and I feel my own lips mirroring his. Why the big smile?
Most of the guys I work with are married to teachers. It seems like the American dream.
Police officers and teachers? He nods. I think people who are focused on helping others, although in much different capacities, are drawn to those same types of people.
I'm definitely drawn to you, Megan.
I hate the sound of my fake name coming from his lips, but I'm committed to it and not going to confess now.
What's your first name, O'Neill?
He shakes his head.
Too personal?
Oh, I want to get personal with you.
And an expert at avoidance. Figures.
It was nice meeting you, I say, after wiping my mouth and pulling cash from my purse to leave on the table. Be safe. He doesn't try to stop me when I stand, and although he's gorgeous and a protector, did I honestly think we'd have some type of love match?
His job is dangerous. Cops are notorious, unfortunately, for cheating on their significant others. This man won't even tell me his first name. All clear signs to cut my losses and get out of here.
The walk into the diner didn't unnerve me at all, but leaving now that it's dark outside makes me realize I parked a little too far out for comfort. My dad's voice is in my head as I slip my keys between my fingers in case I need them for protection. The fact that a New Mexico State police officer is 30 yards away inside the diner doesn't ease all of my fears. I'm well aware that bad things can happen right under people's noses with them being none the wiser.
Megan!
I freeze. The new voice somehow already familiar.
Let me walk you to your car.
I don't turn to face him, but when he makes it to my side, I fall into step with him. The warm hand he places flat on my back sends shivers down my spine, even though I'm no longer scared in the darkness. When we approach my car, the only light comes from the parts of the moon not covered in clouds, and I feel reckless. I feel like I don't want the night to end, even though he has a job to do, and I'm expected at the Cerberus clubhouse in 2 hours. When I turn around to face him, he doesn't step back. His fingers trail down my face, pushing a lock of hair from my cheek.
You should park closer. It's not safe.
I lift up on my toes and press my mouth to his. He doesn't pull back, doesn't tell me I'm being inappropriate. He does none of that. When I lick at his lower lip, he groans, pulls me to his chest, and opens his mouth to sweep his tongue across mine. Tonight, by far, will be the craziest thing I've ever done in my life.
Prologue. Drew. Several months later. Really? I grin, keeping my eyes on the road as my field training officer Warren tells me the good news. Seriously, and I owe my thanks to you. I chuckle. Dude, I didn't have anything to do with knocking your wife up. Asshole, he mutters, but there's still humor in his voice. It happened that night I went home. That night. He doesn't even have to give me details to make me recall what I was doing that night. That night, I dropped Warren off in front of his house after his wife texted that she was ovulating. I cringe now, just like I did then with the memory, but apparently he's an oversharer. That night I was instructed to grab something to eat and stay out of trouble while he took care of business. That night, I met Megan. That night, she kissed me under the moonlight. That night, I did something I thought I'd never do and took her right on the hood of her car in the parking lot of a diner. I scrubbed my hand down my face. I was in full damned uniform, gun belt still around my waist as I... Nope, not revisiting what happened. Chubbing with Warren, riding shotgun, can't happen. I save those thoughts and memories for when I'm alone. That night has haunted my mind, infiltrated my dreams, and have been the images I've been getting myself off with for months. Megan broke me. Or maybe it was the experience. than knowing we were doing something wild and crazy, something illegal that could make me lose my badge that is such a turn-on. Whatever it is, I can't let go of the memory. Can't see another girl with long brown hair and pretty hazel eyes without thinking it's her. More than once, I've tapped a woman on the shoulder only to be disappointed when she turns around. Seriously, though, thank you. We find out in a couple weeks what we're having, but man, I'm just happy she's finally pregnant. We've been trying for the last year. Now we can have regular sex, and it doesn't feel like a job. How many times have I told you the details of your sex life? Don't interest. Dispatch interrupts with the call, giving the location and not much else in regard to details about a two-person collision on U.S. Route 550 north. It's that time of night, Warren mutters after responding to dispatch about being en route. Plus graduations and kids going home for summer break. As I drive to the scene, lights flashing and siren blaring, lead settles in my gut, as if there's a dark cloud over me. I'm not an intuitive person. Most of the skills I have that are useful as a police officer have been part of my training. Before we're able to get close enough to park and assist, before my eyes can register the smoke billowing from a mangled blue car, before I can even get my seatbelt off, I know this night is going to change me forever. You get the car, I'll get the truck, Warren tells me, his calm voice a stark contrast to the pounding happening in my chest. Ambulance sirens are distant, and I can't tell how far away they are as I approach the driver's side door of the wrecked car, its familiarity threatening to bring my lunch back up. Then I see the brown hair, tangled and matted with blood. I can't get her out, a man yells, his voice frantic. Sir, step aside. I somehow manage. Graduation, kids going home for summer break. Warren's words echo in my head as I lean into the vehicle to assess the situation. A shattered windshield, a crumpled dash, no seatbelt, a broken girl. I'm a college student, elementary education. That's what she told me that night. I can hear the words as if Megan is standing right beside me. Ma'am, I say, my voice lower than it should be, too filled with emotion for the job that's expected of me. Can you hear me? Her face tilts the slightest bit, but her gorgeous hazel eyes don't open. Megan, I snap a little louder. Open your eyes, baby. Let me know you're going to be okay. I clasp her hands in mine as her eyes flutter weakly. The shadows in the car are too dark for me to see them clearly, but I know what they look like. I memorized them that night. The cut on her face seems superficial, although it's bleeding. Keeping a hold of her hand, I scan down her body to assess her other injuries. The steering wheel pressed to her chest and the spider-webbed windshield are both concerning. But a ragged breath draws my eyes back to her face. Help me, she gasps. I'm here. We're going to get you out of here. The minuscule amount of grasp she had on my hand disappears, and the tension in her body eases. Her flushed skin turns ashen so quickly, it's as if someone waved a hand from her hairline to her neck, taking all her coloring along with it. She's gone. This isn't the first fatality accident scene I've responded to. Objectively, I know she's dead. I know I'll never speak to her again. I know I'm going to have to notify her family of their loss. I know she'll never be a teacher. I know I'll never get to brush my mouth against hers again. I know I'll regret not getting her number that night. But at the time, I didn't realize just how obsessed with her I'd become. How she'd managed to take over my thoughts. I know all of this, but accepting it seems like an impossibility. Move! I'm shoved out of the way, seconds from clocking some asshole in the face when I realize it's the paramedics finally arriving to help. In stunned shock, I stand to the side watching as they take vitals, watching as one guy shakes his head with a frown, watching as they pull a blanket out and drape the side of her car with it. O'Neill, a little help? Warren is standing in front of a frowning man of about 50, but all that registers is his flailing arms as he points at his truck. My feet move on their own, carrying me toward my training officer and the man involved in the accident. His face is bleeding, a cut on his forehead leaving streaks of red down his pale, ashen cheek. Bloodshot eyes dart all over the place, as if he can't seem to focus on any one thing. The truck will be towed, Warren is explaining as I join them. It's fine to drive. I'm not paying towing and impound fees. I hear the words, but it's the alcohol in his breath that tells me all I need to know. You're going to jail, Warren says. You caused this accident.
A fucking fender bender, the man counters. I have fucking insurance.
She's dead, I mumble. She's fucking dead. Most people claim they black out when they go into a rage, that they just snap and don't realize what they're doing. This isn't the case for me. When I charge this piece of shit, I feel the power of my legs moving me forward. I feel the scratch of his shirt under one palm and the slam of my knuckles against his face. I feel the spittle leaving his mouth and landing on my cheek when I make impact. I feel his boots skid against mine as he goes down. I feel the heave of his chest when we both land on the ground. I feel each blow to his face as I rain down my own judgment on this man. What I don't feel is Warren tugging on me. I don't hear him cussing and telling me to calm down. I don't feel the other men required to drag me away. All those things were caught on our body cams. Not only will I get to see what happened that night, reliving it over and over, so will a jury of my peers.
Chapter 1. Isabella. Several months later. I'm telling you, it's not going to happen that way for me. My best friend Sophia snuggles closer to her boyfriend, a frown marking her pretty face. I'm sure my dad would be mad if I got pregnant, but he'd come around eventually. My dad isn't the problem. My mother will never accept this baby. My hand flutters protectively over my huge belly. Didn't your mom have you even younger? 17, I confirm. But I was supposed to learn from her mistakes, not make the same ones. You're grown, Sophia reminds me. Graduated college and everything. I nod, agreeing with her, but this isn't the first time I've had this conversation with her. My mother is sticking to her guns. She won't accept my phone calls and definitely doesn't want anything to do with news on the baby. It's as if she believes if she ignores the entire situation, it'll go completely away. In a way, it has. I'm living with my dad now. His house is finally finished, and although he didn't anticipate his daughter getting pregnant, he had a room ready for me when I came home with the news. Came home with the news isn't exactly how it went down. I told my best friend, and she let it slip many months ago. It just so happens everyone was around, including my dad and my stepmother. The craziest part, aside from getting pregnant from a one-night stand that happened in a parking lot on my Toyota Corolla, a story I fully plan to lie about when my child is old enough to start asking questions, my stepmother is also pregnant. Dad and Gigi's story is about as wild as the one I'm keeping close to my chest. I can't even trust Sophia with the details. It's not that I feel shame, but yeah, getting pregnant by a guy whose first name I don't even know? Not really the thing fairy tales are made of, you know? Back to Dad and Gigi. Georgia Anderson is not only just a few years older than me, she's also the daughter of Diego Kincaid Anderson, the Cerberus MC president. When Dad told me he was joining an MC, my head went straight to guns, drugs, using women, and hurting people. All the things television has portrayed motorcycle clubs to be. Cerberus is nothing like that. If the bad MCs are one percenters on one end of the spectrum, Cerberus is on the opposite. My dad, as well as all the other members, are good guys, all retired Marines, all working together to help people who have been sex trafficked. Their job repeatedly takes them out of the country, putting them in harm's way. But over the decades, the MC has managed to build a family, a group of people willing to go above and beyond for anyone welcomed into the fold. Dad, working for Kincaid, somehow got Gigi on his radar, and as fuzzy as the details surrounding that situation are, I prefer to keep them that way. Those two are like horny teenagers, and I doubt they care that they aren't fooling anyone with side eyes and whispered comments. When I first visited, they were a little more closeted about their bedroom lives. But as I've gotten older, they either aren't hiding it as much, or I'm now understanding what certain looks can lead to. I got those looks once.
eyes drilling into me with suggestion and wishes. I run my hand back over my belly. Those looks are how I'm in this situation.
She'll come around, Sophia assures me, and I just nod my head in agreement.
Sophia's dad, Dominic, is Kincaid's brother, and although he works with the MC, he's never officially joined. He's the only one around here without a leather cut, but that doesn't make him any less imposing when he's in a room. Sophia is of the opinion that things will work out, and eventually my mother will open her eyes and accept this baby. Sophia also comes from an intact family. Her mother and father still so much in love, they're literally making goo-goo eyes at each other across the room right now. She has an older sister that is involved with two men. Actually, Jasmine, Max, and Tug are a triad, all loving each other equally. So it's no surprise her dad didn't really bat an eye when she came forward not long ago and confessed her love for her intern training officer, Colton Matthews, despite their age difference. Hell, I think Sophia's parents are nearly 20 years or so apart in age. Colton has a teenage son, who come to find out was already sort of a Cerberus family member already, because Dustin's, one of the other original members, son Landon, is best friends with him. We're just one big, happy family and growing more every day, it seems. Apollo, one of the newest Cerberus members to join the ranks, squeezes my hand. We've become good friends, growing close during the time my dad wanted to murder him because he thought Apollo was the man who got me pregnant. Although I haven't explained my situation to my dad, I assured him his assumptions were wrong.
You okay?
He whispers, as Sophia and Colton strike up a conversation about how weird it is for Colton's parents to be here at the clubhouse. I'm fine.
You're squirming.
The baby is sitting weird. I straighten my back, but it doesn't alleviate the ache.
Are you going to be sick?
I shake my head. God bless this man for being such a good friend. This pregnancy has been brutal. Morning sickness started before the test came back positive, and I'm sure I haven't had but a handful of vomit-free days since. I don't think so. His lip twitches, and not for the first time I wonder why I can't be attracted to him, why I can't see this man as more than a friend. He'd take care of me. A promise he made months ago when he confessed his own feelings for me. He took the news of me not seeing him that way on the chin like a champ, and not once has he faltered in his friendship. It still leaves me wondering if he isn't holding out for me to change my mind. But it's the reason I pull my hand from his and place it in my lap. Things that I didn't analyze before, the touching, hand-holding, the kiss on the cheek goodnight, are all things I have to avoid now. These are the things I think are confusing him into thinking there's the possibility of being something more.
Let me know if you need anything.
Apollo pats my leg before twisting to talk to one of the other guys over his shoulder. When I look back at my best friend and see the way she's looking at Colton, I should avert my eyes. But they're so in love. They can't keep their hands, mouths, or eyes off each other, regardless that both of their parents are on the other side of the room. With eyes focused on each other's mouths, I feel my own body grow warm. You've got to stop looking at me like that, Sophia whispers loud enough for me to hear. Do you want to end up in the empty bedroom again? Colton nods his head slowly, and I have to clamp my lips between my teeth to keep from smiling. They've been in and out of that empty room more than once today. Maybe I'm jealous. Maybe I wish I had what they have. Maybe I'm just hungry or need a nap. Maybe it's gas making my heart pound. Stop, Sophia says as she swats at his chest.
You guys are disgusting,
I groan.
Can't you turn it off, even for a few hours?
Sophia shifts her weight to give me more of her attention. What's wrong? She presses her hand to my round belly. Feeling a little left out?
How can I feel left out when I'm right in the middle of your foreplay? I mutter.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?